Ah, the kiwi, that blessed bird in New Zealand, which apparently is under threat because actually recent research that's been put together by New Zealand-based company Old Mout Cider reveals that 85% of Britons are agreeing that everyone is responsible for saving these vulnerable animals because at the current rate, the kiwi bird will be extinct within 50 years. Outrageous! Who can we call to actually sort out this challenge? Well, certainly a superheroine in every sense of the word, wildlife expert extraordinaire and ace presenter, Michaela Strachan. How are you, Michaela?
I'm pretty good, Alex. How are you?
Very good indeed. Always a delight to speak to your good self. Even along something like this area where there is a big challenge here and we need to not just be aware of this but also hopefully do something to actually save the kiwi.
And do you know that it's very positive when we look at saving the kiwi? There are so many animals that are on the bridge of extinction and yet you know that there's no real hope. But with the kiwi, there is hope, and there's a really positive plan to save them. And what they're trying to do is make predator-free islands, because obviously kiwis are they're flightless birds, and they've grown up in New Zealand where there were never any predators. So New Zealand animals evolved to not have to escape predators. The only mammal that was on New Zealand was a bat, I think, until man arrived, bringing lots of predators with him. And the main problem for the kiwi are stoats, possums, dogs, cats, rats, and they can wipe out kiwis. And so what they're trying to do in New Zealand is make predator-free islands where these kiwis can grow and thrive and survive.
Indeed. Now, in the studio, we also have our ace co-presenter, Tessa Snart. Tessa, who is with BBC Radio 2 recently, doing workplace and so on. But as she said, without Michaela Strachan, basically her whole inspiration for life would just not... Tessa, you can finally meet your idol.
Hello, Michaela. It's lovely to speak with you today.
Tessa, it's always such a delight to meet somebody that says that. And it's always makes you feel very privileged to do the job you're doing, to know that you've inspired people to also go into wildlife and conservation. So good to meet you.
Oh, you too. You really have. I mean, I remember in year seven, I was very, very young. I went as a wildlife conservationist because of you. I used to watch you on the TV and yeah, it really inspired me. And I'm a big animal lover myself anyway. And to read these facts today, I've got a sheet in front of me and it's incredible. I mean, I'm reading here every 5 minutes, a species somewhere on the planet becomes extinct. I mean, that's scary.
I didn't even know that fact. I mean, 200 species a day become extinct. Now, when we say that, we're obviously not talking about iconic species because it would be on the front page of every newspaper.
Yes, yeah.
We're talking about plants, insects, you know, plankton or whatever. And it's only when a really iconic animal goes extinct that it gets attention. This year, for instance, the northern white rhino went extinct. Yeah. Well, I say that there are three females left that we know of, but the male died. So basically that's the end of the species. And of course it was on the front page of every newspaper because it's an iconic animal, just like the kiwi, totally iconic animal, particularly in New Zealand. I mean, New Zealanders are called kiwis. So if we can't save these iconic animals, quite frankly, nothing else stands a chance.
I mean, how can the general public help? How can we get more involved to save species and help the planet?
Well, with the kiwi, let's take the kiwi as an example. Yeah. I mean, obviously that's in New Zealand and what they're trying to do are these predator-free islands. So in the UK, you're not going to be able to go and help actually do that. I mean, that's something that the government are doing, yeah, and the environmental agencies are doing. But, you know, it's getting people knowledgeable about these things. And I think that's what part of the Old Mout campaign is all about, is making people aware that this iconic little bird, the kiwi, you know, such an adorable, quirky bird, yeah, could be extinct in our lifetime. And then what we're asking people to do is basically sign up to the mission. And everybody that signs up to the mission, by either going onto the internet, put Save the Kiwi, or going to the Old Mout website, 20p will be donated. And obviously raising money is a really important thing to do. I mean, I think when people ask me that, what do you do to save wildlife and the environment, I think first of all you've got to work out the threats. With the kiwi, for instance, we know what the threats are. It's predators mainly, obviously loss of habitat. It's always a problem. You've got to save the environment. So that's what they're doing. They're doing these predator-free islands. You've got to boost the numbers. And in New Zealand with the kiwi, they're doing something called Operation Nest Egg, where they take the eggs and they raise the chicks and they put them back into a safe environment. Awareness is very important, and raising money is important. So, I mean, those are the five things that really fit this campaign and fit so many other campaigns as well.
Yes, yeah. I think it's fantastic what you're doing, and yeah.
I think it's so fantastic. I think we'll feature this piece not only in Siren Radio's main output, but also on Tessa's very own show, Sound and Country Vision, a podcast which is growing by the day, Michaela.
Brilliant.
Just looking to, again, some of these facts, actually, I was shocked to find a single unsupervised dog can wipe out an area's kiwi population in just a few days. That is astounding. I mean,
it is, and dogs aren't the only problem. As I say, stoats are a massive problem. Possums are a massive problem. And, of course, these animals weren't on New Zealand before we came along and sort of went into New Zealand. So it is a massive problem. Cats are a problem as well. I mean, dogs, you need to put them on a lead if you're anywhere near kiwi. I mean, obviously, this doesn't affect people in the UK. But those same sort of things do affect people in the UK. When you go into a park with deer, for instance, put your dog on a lead. Don't let it chase the deer. You know, that might be a female, might be pregnant, and then it's a problem. So I think we just need to be very aware, and I think people just need to use their common sense a lot.
Michaela, from your vast experience from shows with Really Wild Show, Wild Challenge, Elephant Diaries, Country File and Spring, do you get a sense that the prognosis is good, that actually we've raised the consciousness? I mean, back in the day, and this is before Tessa was born I'm speaking about, we have this line where, okay, there's a kind of awareness of the ecology of the society, of the planet, and the fact that we are all in a living, breathing ecosphere, everybody interdependent, etc. Has that message got out? I mean, as well as getting out there, are people generally reacting to it? I mean, what I'm saying, Michaela, is are we looking to a good 21st century as we continue to proceed through the years as far as our fellow species on the planet are concerned?
I think there are really two sides to this, and I think maybe 50% of us are becoming more aware and we're becoming more conscious of what we're doing. And I think 50%, I mean, I don't know whether it's 50-50, but there's a huge percent that actually don't give a damn. Mm. And they will go on and they will consume as much as they can, and that's their sort of attitude to life. But I think I have been really heartened in the last few years. I've got stepkids that are 28. I've got twin boys of 28. Mm. And both of them are absolutely passionate about conservation and sustainability, and they're surrounded by friends that feel the same way. But I do think there is a problem that if you are into conservation and wildlife, then you do tend to surround yourself with like-minded people, which can make you think that everyone's thinking the same way as you. And yet then you meet people that you think, how can you think like that? How can you go and think it's a sport to hunt a fox down? You know, how can you think it's a sport to shoot a grouse? There are very different-minded people.
And the best place to go to, Michaela, to find out more about the old mount, I don't know, pronounce tomato, tomato, who knows?
You know,
what
it must be
there.
The most mispronounced cider in the world. It's Old Moot Cider.
Exactly.
And best place to go is the website oldmootcider.co.uk. Or, as I say, just put in Save the Kiwi and you'll see all the information. We actually went to New Zealand and we did a video to explain what is being done. It's called Forgotten World, and you can see that video on YouTube from today.
Well, I know Tessa will be going straight there.
Well, I'm writing it down as we speak.
You finally have the opportunity to thank Michaela for inspiration, which is wonderful on that basis. I always knew, Michaela, that it was going to be an awesome phone link. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephone link with us at the programme today?
It's been great. I always enjoy talking about conservation and wildlife.
Well, in which case, we really should actually set the campaign now going to get you a professorship at the University of Lincoln.
Oh,
so
yes.
we'll work on that.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Whatever. Will you be kind enough to return in the not too distant future? Will you be back with us?
Of course I will. I'll come on and chat about anything to do with wildlife and conservation.
Brilliant. Michaela Strachan, we salute you. Take care now.
Take care. Thanks.
Bye.
putting electrical safety first is something which is critical, even though perhaps sometimes we get carried away and think, oh, it's something we can take for granted and so on. 18 million British folk are falling victim to counterfeit electrical goods online, with sellers misusing e-commerce sites such as eBay, Amazon and so on. 92% of British folk incorrectly believe that e-commerce platforms regulate and monitor third-party sellers. Now, to raise this issue and indeed provide some hopefully helpful advice in terms of how to combat this, we're delighted to welcome the Chief Executive Officer of Electrical Safety First. That's the wonderful Phil Buckle. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
Phil, this is quite a staggering number and actually has an awful lot of knock-on effects in terms of people who could be putting their lives at risk, not only their loved ones and houses and so on, really.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, there are going to be an increasing number of people buying online. So, you know, that risk will increase as those numbers go up. And, you know, we all want a bargain. We're all looking to replace items on a regular basis. So online shopping is here to stay. And you know, what we're trying to get across to everybody is that enjoy your online shopping. But, you know, there is a bit of a buyer beware message here, because you can easily fall foul of the counterfeiters or those that want to sell you a substandard product.
Well, so that's quite interesting, because I know a year or so back I had there was a product recall for one of my Amazon Fire scenarios, where the recharger, effectively, they'd sent out something which had proven to be incorrect and faulty from that perspective. Now, that's one instance, but we can't rely on people picking up from the point of view of the sales thing. And when you get companies who ostensibly have a huge market share like Amazon, who have issues with respect to this, and clearly other areas, you've got to really take care to ensure that, as you said, we don't purchase material that will later lead to regrets.
That's right. I mean, well, you know, Amazon, as you mentioned, I mean, that's, they did the right and appropriate thing, because that's their product on their website, and, you know, they can control that, and they issued a recall, dealt with it accordingly, you know, and rightly so, and good for them. Unfortunately, it's on their marketplace website, as with eBay, where you get many different sellers coming in with offers of products for various prices, where you can end up getting something that isn't quite what you thought you were buying. And it's easy to set up these pages on the website as a company. We've done it ourselves. We've set up a fake electrical company to sell products. We didn't list any products, so there was no danger to the public, but we just went through the exercise to see whether or not we would get blocked, and we didn't. And we used fake ID, and so, you know, there are serious concerns, and things need to be controlled, because in a more stringent way, because online shoppers do have a huge amount of confidence in the Amazon and eBays of the world, because they think they regulate their sellers, and unfortunately that's not always the case.
Tumble dryers, kettles, travel adapters, hair straighteners, Cody boxes are all some of the items which have caused concern in this whole area. Are those the kind of major routines, or is it a case of, well, actually anything that involves charging and electricity, etc., can be a challenge here?
Yes, anything that can be copied and will be sold if there's an opportunity. So you don't lull yourself into a false sense of security. Ideally, and this is what we would recommend, that if you are buying an electrical product, don't take the risk. Go to the retailer that you can trust on the high street or online, or use the manufacturer's website to purchase your product, because you know then you're buying what you're paying for, whereas when you go online to one of the marketplace type websites, you need to do some checks before you make the purchase, and you need to do some checks once you've got the product at home. I mean, the pre-purchase checks are quite simple and straightforward. You know, the price is always a good indicator. If it's far too cheap to believe, keep clear of it, because it's unlikely that you're getting the real deal. But even then, some of these sellers will pitch their product price quite close to the actual manufacturer's recommended retail price. And so you think you're getting something a little bit better, and we all want to achieve a bit of a bargain. But unfortunately, it can be fake. And often, the seller won't provide contact details on their page. If you can't find contact details, who do you go back to if you have a problem? So, you know, again, that's another flag to say to you, you know, let's not use that particular seller. We'll look for someone else that is going to be able to support us if we need some help, if we feel we have a concern about the product.
Has the virtual environment effectively replaced the traditional area of black market and dodgy marketing, such as the back of lorries falling off and various other bits and pieces? Is it a case of counterfeiters are becoming much more sophisticated now, and that's the reason that more people are kind of, unfortunately, suffering as a result?
Yes, they can sell from a distance. You know, they could be in another part of the world, and they're getting their products fulfilled by the websites that they're selling through, and that's another issue. If you see fulfilled by, say, Amazon, for example, you might think it's actually being sold by Amazon, but it's not necessarily the case. It could just be the product has been shipped to one of their warehouses, and you know, when you click buy, they will fulfill that purchase to you on behalf of the seller. But if you then have a problem, it's between you and the seller. It's not between you and Amazon or eBay. And that's where the issues can arise and the concerns can or you know, the issues arise, and then you find yourself left in the lurch and either losing money, or if you think, oh well, I'll carry on using the product because I'm sure it's okay, you could end up with a fire being caused in your home. You could end up with the risk of electric shock. Because I make no bones about it, some of the phone chargers that we've taken apart have no safety devices in them. There's no protection from any overloads. They can end up, you know, with live mains voltage at the end of the lead where you plug it into your phone. So not only are you going to wreck your phone, if you catch hold of that, you're going to get an electric shock.
Inspecting the packaging, looking for a legitimate safety certification label, and checking the plugs on the item are suggestions that you make in terms of ensuring that the thing isn't counterfeit. Of course, to do that, the goods will have had to be paid for. Is there a kind of right of response? Is there a legal area in which, if you've paid presumably online via a credit card, you can actually sort of say, hang on a minute here, you've sold me a pup?
Yes, if you paid by credit card or PayPal, then you've got some redress through you know, your card provider or through PayPal, so you could get your money back. But what we're trying to make sure is that you don't end up in that unfortunate situation. I've bought electrical products online. I've been really suspicious of what I'm buying because I just, you know, risk averse anyway, I guess, through my job. But you know, I went at great pains to make sure that before buying it, I satisfied myself, and when I did get the product home, I compared it like for like with the old one. There were some subtle differences, but none that was made me sort of feel that the product wasn't the real thing. And I've used it, and happily to say that it's been in service for about 5 years now without causing me a problem. So as long as you make your safety checks both before and after you've got the product, you should be okay. But if you have any suspicions, you know, trust your instincts. Don't think, oh well, I'll just carry on, it'll be okay, because potentially it won't be, and that will cause you great harm potentially.
And presumably looking for previous customer feedback online, which often, certainly with the major retail sites, you're encouraged to give feedback. That's not necessarily a guarantee that what you're purchasing is going to be safe.
Not always, no, because some people that have been duped before you may give something a review that is positive when actually the product is unsafe and they're not aware of it. And we all know that if you can fake a product, you can fake a review as well. And it's important that you make sure that the reviews are from a trusted source if you're going to rely on those.
Okay, we've covered a range of things here. Where can people actually go to online to find out further details about what we spoke about today, Phil, and indeed those top tips, including the notion of order fulfilled by, watch out for those lines, etc., to find out details about the work that you do with Electrical Safety First?
Yes, for information on the topic that we've been discussing today and lots of other information on electrical safety, go to electricalsafetyfirst.org.uk/spotthefake.
It's a lot easier when Benjamin Franklin was doing the lightning experiments, I think. Really.
Certainly was.
Mind you, he probably didn't have any sort of certificate of safety at that stage, but still, what the heck.
No.
Phil, it's been fabulous touching base with your good self today. Many thanks for some very useful advice, and I'm sure we'll speak again very soon. Take care now.
Thank you.
the whole notion of being a hero in the 21st century and the 20th century all ties in with a whole variety of other bits and pieces. And when you're an Olympic medalist and a javelin thrower, you've earned the rights to be called legend as well as hero. Accordingly, the best person to speak about the long waiting times for NHS operations and indeed tests that have got an adverse impact on the patient is the aforementioned legend that is Steve Backley, OBE. Steve, good to connect with you. How are you?
Wow, that's an introduction. How do I live up to that? Thank you, Alex.
Easily, Steve, because you are a champion. You're an Olympic champion, which is wonderful stuff. And, of course, you've experienced one of the challenges that we've actually had with respect to having an artificial hip, working through the process. So you've had a hip replacement a few years ago. It's given you a new lease of life. It seems, though, that many people who are actually in need of this often are subject to delays and all manner of bits and pieces from that point of view, as this recent research by Nuffield Health has revealed.
It has. It's revealed that the wait is, you know, 1 in 10 and people over 60 wait around half a year. No real surprises there. I think what's come out of the research, though, is the emotional impact it's having on those individuals. And, you know, the mental health and the well-being, you know, the wider cost of waiting is something that we should take into consideration. You know, people are naturally anxious. They're naturally fearful. They're nervous about having the procedure and the impact it's going to have on their lives, you know, through that waiting process. And, you know, there's a cost to that. And I think that the message today here is, you know, that there are other options available, and to be aware of them is an important part of, you know, looking after yourself and making sure that you do the right thing at the right time.
Indeed. I mean, looking at some of the numbers, 38% of people have had to wait for an operation say it gave them anxiety. And again, 1 in 3 people aged over 60 say that the wait for an operation or diagnostic test had a detrimental effect on their mental health, which it's a bit like a vicious circle. It kind of goes round and round, and clearly that can't be good for the overall well-being of the individual.
Yeah, and I've been there. And I think that's the point here. You do, you feel like your world is imploding. You know, you're starting to not do things, so there's some avoidance behaviour. And that impacts on your quality of life. And, you know, for many people, they talked about in this research that they put their lives on hold. And that's, very, you know, of course, extremely detrimental in terms of us thriving and growing. So the message today is that there is a choice. There are other alternatives. You know, I went down the independent route for my surgery. Over 10 years ago now, and have never looked back. And it was a choice that I made. I understood the costs involved, and the emotional costs, and the physical and the financial costs. And I chose to go down that route because I suppose being an athlete, you know, I put it in high regard. You know, it was something that I was naturally programmed to do, looking after myself.
And just share with us the impacts that the pain that you were suffering before the operation and after the operation. You know, what kind of impact did that actually have, Steve, on your life and those closest to you?
Yeah, it's funny in some ways because the impact is quite subtle at first. It's chronic, so it, you know, it goes on for a long period of time, and it's different for every person. But I think the typical story, and this is very much my story, is when it really started to impact my quality of life when I maybe wasn't sleeping as well, so I felt tired. I felt like there was a weight hanging over me. So there was an emotional kind of, a weight to bear, you know, emotionally around that. But after surgery, once the immediate recovery, you know, within a few weeks, it was literally like that weight was lifted. So you know, looking back, if that weight was extended, that would have certainly have had detrimental effect. And that's what the research has revealed. And, you know, going down the independent route was my choice. I understand that's not for everyone, but quite often the costs aren't as high as we expect. And it's certainly worth looking whether a self-pay approach is something that you might be able to consider. Certainly being aware of it is important.
Well, that's one of the aspects about Nuffield Health, Steve, that in terms of being able to offer diagnostic tests and operations with no waiting list, it's almost as though it's kind of like a fast track, really. And, you know, as Israel said, we don't want to get into the challenges that the NHS are actually faced with, but that has surely got to be good as an option to consider, at least.
Exactly that. And the NHS does a fantastic job. It's just saying that, yet, as you say, there is another option. Getting your life back on track is what this is all about.
I love the web link, which is nuffieldhealth.com/no-waiting-list, because it kind of says exactly what it's going to do on that basis, really. Presumably, you could also go to nuffieldhealth.com/hospitals for further details.
Absolutely right, yeah.
Steve, it's been awesome sharing some thoughts with your good self today. You are a champion, you were a champion, you will still be a champion, you always are a champion, basically. Steve Buckley, MBE, many thanks indeed, and we'll speak again very soon. Take care now.
Thanks, Alex.
Bills, 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 and more bills. It sometimes seems as though life is just a series of actually paying various companies for various services rendered, etc. However, a recent survey by retailer Carphone Warehouse has reported that 56% of consumers don't know the standard price of energy bills for their home. And of those who receive energy bills through the post, only one in five actually read them. This whole classic line of billiteracy clearly is not an effective way to manage one's finances. And when we're looking to manage one's finances effectively, then who better than ace financial writer extraordinaire and top broadcaster, the wonderful Simon Reid. How are you, Simon?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex, and thank you for that introduction.
That's perfectly okay, Simon. Now let's move to this particular aspect, because I've just been reading my own energy bill, and I realised that I hadn't sent in an estimate, so they're kind of overestimated by a whole range of things. It's important that we actually keep appraised of what we're actually shelling out for. Otherwise, those estimations, they can charge whatever they wish, it would seem.
Well, they can't charge you whatever they wish, but they can overcharge you. And the fact is, if you don't know how much you're paying for your gas and electricity, the chances are you are overpaying. And you wouldn't just pick up food from your grocery store without knowing the prices. You check the prices. You should do exactly the same with all your regular bills. You know, we have to heat and light our home. We might as well get the best price we can for it.
Is there a classic case of almost British financial illiteracy here, which kind of pays or plays very much into the hand of certainly the big six companies, and the whole notion of saying, well, OK, if we just nudge this up slightly, we can actually increase a couple of pennies here, a couple of pennies there, and suddenly we've got huge profits?
I think that's exactly right. I think two elements come into play. First is we think that these big companies are not going to rip us off. We trust them. We've been with them for years, but the fact is they will rip us off. They rely on us, the fact that we've been with them for years, so they can overcharge us. I think you'll even find that most of the big six companies have better tariffs than the one you're likely to be on. But the fact is you'd be better off switching to another company altogether and saving hundreds of pounds. You know, and it's quite easy to switch these days. You know, you can go online, find a different prices and switch there. Or companies are now offering collective switches. There's a new green switch, collective switch from Carphone Warehouse, which seems a great way to save up to £296 a year, getting them to do all the negotiating for you and coming up with a better deal.
Well, I've got to actually hold my hand up here and say that I'm actually only electricity. I have actually stayed with the same company actually for the last 25 years. I haven't changed at all, really. But I do read the bills. I do check the things from that perspective. Is it a kind of a reluctance, not so much a fear, but despite all of the publicity, is there some sort of sense that is deep-rooted in us that says, oh, there must be a catch here somewhere?
I think that's probably true. I think people think, well, I'm happy with what I'm paying. But the fact is, if they don't know how much they're paying and if they don't know how much cheaper it is, then they're fooling themselves. What I like to say to people is this: give me an hour of your time and I'll save you hundreds of pounds. And most people will say, well, what do I have to do? All you have to do is switch your energy supply and you've got an extra couple of hundred quid in your pocket. Now, I think anyone who doesn't take advantage of that really is being a bit foolish.
No, that's absolutely right. Now, how often should we actually be checking our meter readings? Because it is a lot easier than used to be the case. I mean, it was fairly simple to actually find out where your electricity meter reading actually was and then to actually read through the digital numbers that are actually there. Would you recommend once a quarter, once a week, once a year?
Well, if you do it regularly, you know, the fact is that one in five people has never sent their meter readings to their energy supplier, which means the only way they can charge them is by estimating the use, and that will almost certainly lead to overcharging. So you should do it regularly. It doesn't need to be once a week, but I'd say, yeah, once a quarter, just to keep things ticking over, to make sure you're not being overcharged. And once you get into the habits, like a lot of things, well, it's no big deal, really.
See, being a traditionalist, I have up to now actually submitted my readings via that wonderful thing, the telephone. A few weeks ago, I decided, OK, I'll do it electronically. I did it electronically, and then instantly I get a response back saying, thank you for registering to receive all further bills via email from us. I hadn't done that. I still wanted the paper copy. Is that a sort of area where, again, it can sort of switch people off and say, look, all I wanted to do was to just submit my energy reading without going through X number of routines, and now suddenly you've signed me up for something something I didn't really want to sign up for in the first place.
You know, that can happen. To be honest, Alex, I would say switch to online because you get charged extra for your paper bills. Wow. You don't need paper bills. You get your email with a bill. It's quite easy to read, and it will save you money.
You know, I think you're nudging me into the 21st century with this one, clearly, Simon. Is there a lack of trust, ultimately, when it comes to the relationship between consumers and energy providers? We hear so much in the media about how, as we said, the profits are huge, how a bit like the old petrol oil situation. Clearly, that's another energy routine. We have a rocket upwards, feather downwards. Things tend to sort of go sky high, or there's the sort of headline figures which saying we're going to be charged this, 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 and this, and so on. So ultimately, we kind of think, oh, a plague on everybody's house.
I think it is true that the big companies will rip you off if you don't do something about it. You know, the fact is there are some people who pay much less for their energy than the majority of people. And they, you could call them savvy shoppers, but it's just being sensible. You find out where the better deal is, and you do it. People do it with their grocery shopping. You know, you don't go to the most expensive supermarket just because you've always gone there. When you realise there's a cheaper supermarket down the road and you can, you know, save a lot of money on your bills, then you'll do it. And you should do exactly the same with your energy.
See, clearly, Simon, this is one of the reasons why you were the best ever finance editor at the Independent. So, yeah, it's a classic line for this. But we've spoken a great deal about, obviously, the way forward. I think clearly it's a case of fighting for your right, not just to party, but to actually have your right to save funds on that point of view. Where can people go to for further information? They'll be listening to this either live or as a podcast. What's the best way to actually go online and find out more details about the kind of things we've been discussing?
So, you know, if you really want to save money in your energy, you should switch. You can go online and find a comparison site, or you know, if you think that seems quite hard work, there's a new green collective switch from Carphone Warehouse. You can find out all about that at carphonewarehouse.com/energy/switch.
Splendid, Simon. We've got our usual customer satisfaction surveys from yourself at this particular stage. Have you had a reasonably satisfying telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
It's been absolutely fantastic.
In which case, can we look forward to connecting with you again, hopefully in the not too distant future?
Brilliant stuff.